drugs, foreign schemes, it's time to sign. But it should mean it's not the time, but just the dreams that die. And sometimes when the room is still, time is so much truth to give, leaves you by the windowsill so tight. Without a wing,
without a wing,
to take you high,
to take you high.
Without a clue,
without a clue,
to tell you why,
to tell you why.
Now I just want to keep my name, not bother anybody's game. Without ideas of gold and fame or insane heights, I don't want a lot of money, I don't want babe or bunny. Just let call me honey, late at night in my home,
in my hour,
by my side,
by my side,
in my home,
in my hour,
late at night. I don't know him and told everybody wants a hand to hold him. So afraid of being old, so scared of dying, so I know that I'm so alone, rolling home. I see the ones who crawl like moles, the forefront would trade their souls. The broken me is the only hole for them. And for you who'd exchange yourself, just be somebody else, pretending things you never felt. Man, hey, you don't live,
what
do you depend?
Do you depend?
Hey,
you can't give,
so you just bend.
You just bend.
Now if you care what people think, like they supply some missing link, then just stand back and watch you sing so slow. They'll never help you to decide, they'll only take you for a ride. After which they try and hide the fact that they don't know what you should do.
What you should do,
where you should go.
What you should do,
what you should do,
where you should go.
But I don't know, I ain't been told. Everybody wants a hand to hold it. So afraid of being old, so scared of dying, so I know that I'm so alone, rolling home. There's nothing big I want to prove, no mountains that I need to move, or even claim what's right to for you. My sight and song is slightly jarred. You might think they missed their mark, but things are only what they are. You're nothing new but for me. See a king and queen, a beggar falling at my feet. They all must see the same sad dreams at night. Futility and senses war, pit the rich against the poor. My cause is buried long before the fight. But what was wrong?
What was right?
It's just the strong words of this right. But I don't know, I ain't been told. Everybody wants a hand to hold it. So afraid of being old, so scared of dying, so unknown and so alone. Rolling home.
And you're tuned to a special recorded edition of Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. It's June 3rd, 1996, Monday morning, and you're tuned to 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. As usual, we have no phone line, and at the moment we have no live host, because as you're hearing this on Free Radio Santa Cruz, over a piece on KZSC, the student FM radio station, I'm recording a forum with Mike Rotkin, Becky Johnson, Linda LeMaster, Laura Carotti, and possibly Sherry Connable. We're not quite sure who the last two people are. The issue is homelessness. Our focus is civil rights for the homeless, and that forum will be rebroadcast today, Monday, June 3rd at 2 o'clock on Free Radio Santa Cruz 96.3. So if you want, you can listen to both this show now for the next 2 hours from 10 to 12. This is Bathrobes, Piers, Broadsides. And then, in 2 hours after that, you can listen to a forum involving Mike Rotkin, myself, and the other people I mentioned. If you're real impatient, just turn this off right now and hustle on over to KZSC. But we have some interesting stuff ahead of us, including interviews and a historic last interview with Linda the Lark Edwards, an activist who, as I mentioned in our last show, became the basis for the first proclamation of a day named for a homeless person. Linda Edwards was a homeless person, and December 13th of every year is now Linda Edwards Day here in Santa Cruz. It was so proclaimed last year by, ironically, Mayor Mike Rotkin. He was the new mayor. The proclamation was handed to him by Catherine Byers, and he acceded to it. Linda Lee Edwards was a particularly courageous and poignant person. She was a person who lived in her van. I met her in 1988 in the summer when we were organizing a petition drive for a thing called the Petition for Homeless Rights, which concerned, again, issues like the ones we're interested in now, the right of homeless people to sleep at night without harassment by police, the right for citizens to have some kind of review over the police department, an end to discrimination downtown toward poor people and counterculture people. And Linda joined in the fight, and for 7 years after that, she was in the forefront of the fight. She was the first person arrested for serving free food at City Hall, and that arrest happened on December 13th, hence December 13th became Linda Edwards Day. I wrote up a proclamation that I had hoped Catherine Byers, when she was mayor last year, would sign. Instead, Mayor Rotkin signed a somewhat feebler set of statements about Linda Edwards, but still statements that reflected some of what she did and some of what she stood for. But here for the first time is what I proposed. Whereas Linda Lee Edwards has struggled to secure rights for poor and homeless people in Santa Cruz County and across the state, whereas Linda Edwards, houseless herself, fought successfully to expand homeless services in Santa Cruz County, helping through her actions to legalize the River Street shelter, establish the free meal, and legalize the open air shelter, whereas Linda Edwards, even under threat of arrest, provided food to the hungry of Santa Cruz County, whereas Linda Edwards spoke out repeatedly to end discrimination against homeless and vehicular residents in Santa Cruz, whereas Linda Edwards resolutely worked to make public spaces available to all people, particularly the poor, whereas Linda Edwards fought to abolish the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban, Municipal Code 6.36.010, which criminalizes sleep for anyone outside a domicile, whereas Linda Edwards was the first person to be arrested in Santa Cruz for feeding the poor free food on December 13, 1988, in front of City Hall, and through her example inspired dozens, hundreds actually, to resist an unwise and unjust city policy of seeking to criminalize food serving to the poor in visible locations. Therefore, we declare December 13, 1995, Linda Lee Edwards Day in honor of her work in supporting our homeless community. Linda Lee Edwards Day and her life is particularly significant to us today because 3 days ago, the city council, headed by Mayor Mike Rotkin, persuaded Judge Samuel Stevens to issue an injunction against the City Hall Sleepers Vigil, a City Hall Sleepers protest. And part of that injunction said that sleeping at night, which is illegal in Santa Cruz for the homeless, is to be not only a crime punishable first by a $162 ticket on the first offense, and then if a second offense occurs within 48 hours by up to 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine, but on the very first offense for anyone named in the injunction, that can be you or me or whoever tomorrow, because there are 100 Jane and John Doe spots that they can simply fill in once they've served you. On the first offense, you can be convicted of contempt of court if you knew the injunction was happening. So now, thanks to Sam Stevens and Mayor Mike Rotkin, the first offense of sleeping means up to 6 months in jail. But that's sleeping at night. And the reason Linda Edwards' example is so important here is because there's another part of that injunction which says preparing, cooking, or storing food at any time at City Hall, is considered now going to be a criminal offense punishable by up to 6 months in jail for the first such instance of any of that kind of conduct. It's not clear whether this means making a peanut butter sandwich, or perhaps storing it in your backpack, as was suggested by attorney David Beauvais of Berkeley, who tried to fight this injunction and is still fighting it even as we speak. Their attorneys up north are preparing what's called a writ of mandate. But Linda Edwards would have been all over this injunction. And indeed, I'm hoping that groups like Food Not Bombs that continue to feed free food in San Francisco, and indeed here in Santa Cruz, but in San Francisco particularly, in violation of an ancient anti-homeless injunction which was passed first in 1989 and renewed in 1991 and made permanent in 1994, but not enforced currently up in San Francisco, Food Not Bombs will come down here, as it has in the past, and serve free food smack dab in the middle of City Hall grounds, reasserting the right that we all have and should be able to exercise without fear of feeding each other without the interference of small-town bureaucrats and hypocritical politicians like Mike Rutkin, who wish to forsake their own past, in which they indeed championed the rights of people, and do occasionally still champion the rights of people, but not in my backyard, not here in Santa Cruz, not for the poor people who are the everyday reality and have been the every moment reality of the mayor and the city council members since March 1st, 1996, when this vigil began at City Hall demanding the right to sleep at night for homeless people. A small thing, but a big thing, and an important thing. Anyway, Linda Lee Edwards was arrested on December 13th, 1988, for serving soup to a bunch of homeless people before they went in to talk at City Council about this very same issue. And Mayor Marty Wormhout at that time, and now she's Supervisor Wormhout, then Mayor Wormhout decided this was something that she was going to end by bringing in the health department. Now, there was nothing unhealthy about the food that was being served at City Hall. No cases of sickness, no cases of real health problem were ever found. But within 2 months after Linda's arrest and after scores of other arrests, the city and the county, actually it was done by the county, but it was inspired by the city, had gotten an injunction against the people serving free food to the homeless. This was a group called SWAP, Soup Without a Permit. And using that injunction, they actually didn't use the injunction in any final convictions, but they arrested dozens of people, and they did convict two people and tried many more. Two people convicted were a man named Brian Flanagan Staley and a woman named Sandra Loringer, who owned an antique store downtown, and whose statement, "I am beyond rehabilitation," became a classic and can be seen occasionally on my chest as I stroll around the mall with a t-shirt on which it's imprinted. That's what she said to the judge when the judge offered her probation instead of 45 days in jail or 30 days in jail. She said, "Your Honor, I'm beyond rehabilitation. I'm going to go right out there and serve free food again." So that's what happened last night. I think there was food served at City Hall, and usually there's food served there every day for people who are homeless. And that could be ruled to violate this injunction, which bars cooking, preparing, or storing food on the City Hall grounds. We'll see how far Rutkin's police officers will take their injunction and how far Rutkin is going to take it. We know already that because he did not get the main part of what he wanted, which was a ban on people actually being at City Hall after dark, after 10 o'clock at night, apparently he both doesn't like bongos at night, and he doesn't like people at night at City Hall. He didn't get that from Judge Stevens. Stevens said, "No, I'll arrest him and put him in jail for 6 months if they fall asleep or cover up with blankets on the City Hall property after 11 o'clock at night, but it's a little too obvious if we completely remove the Constitution in the evening there. So they can be there. They can't lean a sign against a wall. They can't really set down their sign so it's visible, but they can hold up a sign late at night if they want. But they can't fall asleep and they can't cover up. So Rodkin's response is going to be, he has promised us, an emergency ordinance, which has to then be passed by a 5-2 city council majority vote to bar everyone from the city hall grounds after, what, 10, 11, we're not sure what exact hour he has in mind, but at night. And the only purpose of this law is to eliminate the protesters there. It's a retaliatory action against a successful, a 95-day-old protest today. Well, I wander a bit far afield because I want to get close to the issues that are happening now, this morning, as we speak. There was a large meeting of protesters, activists, and their supporters at City Hall around 10:30 last night, and it was quite a good meeting. People decided they were going to regularly support protesters from 3 to 6 in the morning. And people decided they were going to help table on the mall and up at the university to help inform people about what's going on. And people hassled and fought and shouted at each other, but they didn't leave the meeting. They stayed, and they worked things out. And they're appealing to you, you the listeners of Free Radio Santa Cruz, to support both the free speech rights of the homeless and mainly the right to live, in this case the right to sleep being an essential part of that right to live of poor people, not the right to sleep anywhere and everywhere, as Michael Rodkin falsely describes it, but the right to sleep somewhere. So come down to the City Hall Sleepers protest. Come down during the day. It's a 24-hour protest. It's at 809 Center Street, right across from the main library. Bring a blanket, bring some coffee, bring yourself, bring a determination to help in some way, or just bring open eyes to see what's going on down there, to get past the lies of the Sentinel, and the silence of the city's bureaucrats that could be dealing with the issues that these protesters raise, but instead want to sweep away the protesters like so much litter and debris, flush them down the toilet like so much shit. And they don't mind lying to do so, and they don't mind raising false issues to slander and smear them with, as you saw Mayor Rodkin raise in the Sentinel in the large Sunday spread he got praising his protester past. How he was such a wonderful protester when he was a young man. And now how ironic it is that he's chief cop for the city, in essence. And not only chief cop, cops are supposed to enforce laws, he's initiating repressive laws. Linda Lee Edwards would have been with us, and she really still is with us. And this is an interview you're going to hear now of her last... Well, this was her last interview. It was done in Hillhaven Rest Home, where she was dying of liver cancer, and indeed a week later she was dead. But she wanted this interview to be played. I have mislaid it until this time. But here it is. It's an interview between her, myself, Linda LeMaster, and Gloria Rove. We were all there talking to her friends, fellow activists. We talked about what was happening then, what would happen in the future, and what had happened in the past in Linda's life.
Pierre Robert, reporting live from the current residence of the activist Linda the Lark Edwards. At a secret location, Linda is basking in the sun, wearing the most gigantic sunglasses yet seen on woman or beast, and a very fashionable blue nightgown. Sort of de la mode at the moment. We are near the zebra finches, all things bright and beautiful. It is May 27th, 1995, and about 2 o'clock in the afternoon. I have Miss Edwards here right now. I wonder if I can persuade her to do a little reminiscing about one of her fellow activists, now deceased, the famous Rosebud DeNovo. Linda, do you remember Rosebud DeNovo?
Pretty much. I mean, it's a short-lived time because she died young. Of course, everybody knows.
Rosebud did, in fact, she was die young. She was killed by the police in...
Supposedly, the story was that she took it on herself to dress in black, self-proclaimed anarchist, and a good one at that, and a good activist. And just nobody knows why. She must have had a good reason. Even though she was young, she had a pretty good head on her.
Rosebud was caught with a machete in the bathroom of Chancellor of the Chancellor of the University of California at Berkeley in the August of 1992, shot by police several times, fatally. Although there was no actual danger to the chancellor, who had apparently left or not been there, I'm not sure which, she was killed. I had some tapes of Rosebud myself, but those tapes have since unfortunately disappeared. Actually, they were stolen.
We got one of her talking together.
Oh, really? Maybe we can find that tape. Yeah. But what do you remember about Rosebud, and how did you first meet her?
She was real shy with me, and I was up there for a couple of weeks, and I thought, you know, that's the kind of person I like. You know, no restrictions on her.
Do you remember when you first met her, more or less?
I know it was... what year did she die? 1992.
She died a year after the People's Park volleyball occupation by the police.
It was around that time. And what happened was I wanted to get to know her more. And let me put this over here. And I'll sip on it a little bit at a time. Can't really see things in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
And even did that.
So Rosebud, actually, she gave me a couple of interviews, and I interviewed her around issues of People's Park, which University of California was attempting to, in essence, yuppieize or upscale with a series of sports courts. People's Park, though university property, had in fact been used by homeless people and political activists for the previous 20 years, ever since it was established as a park by the occupation of the community in 1969, when police under Ronald Reagan and the National Guard attempted to remove and destroy People's Park, and did in fact destroy it for a time, but it was recreated. But anyway, Rosebud, what's the skivvy on Rosebud?
Just came here and she wanted to help the park. She believed in it and believed it was a last vestige of, you know, what was free and real. And she said it was worth fighting for, dying for, worth killing for. And this may sound funny from my mouth.
You sound funny.
I felt all right, yeah. She was accused of... she was accused of...
She was accused of making bombs.
My brain's slow. Bombs from the anarchist cookbook. And her and her boyfriend camped out up in the woods. They found her her little cache of goodies, traced her back to her house, and she was in prison. There was where we really got to know her. Before, she was shy, and she would back off from me distrustfully. You could tell she was didn't trust people. And so when she said, I said, "Hi, you're Rosebud, aren't you?" And she would say, "Yeah," and she'd leave. And I thought, I'm going to push it. You know, she's one of those kind of girls. So each time I'd see her, I'd say hello. And she'd be a little friendlier each time. But I haven't got to really know her to get close. She was there in the jail. And
how did you two happen to be in jail together?
She was already in there, and she, you know, for this conspiracy felony. Max was in there.
Maxine Ventura, another female homeless activist?
Yeah, and another girl, I don't know what her name is now. It was the three of us.
Carol Denny?
No, Carol wasn't in this one. Mm-hmm. And so we were in jail all day long, talking. And she seemed to get her lunch break, and everything seemed to be at the same time. And so we told her, and she saw us on TV, being arrested.
And what were you being arrested for, Linda?
Getting in the sandbox, the kind of kitty litter that they put
in. By the giant sandbox or kitty litter box, you mean People's Park's very expensive redwood volleyball court, right?
Yes, that people felt like was nothing but a gigantic kitty litter, so they decided to use it as such. Told her we've been fighting that, and she was really glad to see it, and she was watching TV and saw us all being brought in. And I guess she saw me be willing to, I tried to escape and was grabbed by a police officer and threw back in, hurting my leg, not real seriously, but I was black and blue when I got in that jail.
So you two then began to talk, became closer, confidants?
Yeah, and she started it. And so me and her talked a lot about anarchy mainly, and how she ran away from home. Her family didn't understand her.
Do you consider her a violent person in terms of how her relationships with other people?
Not really. Only if she felt it necessary. Basically, she wanted to focus on freedom and injustice. And if somebody wanted to throw, if they wanted to be violent with her, I guess she'd try to fight back. But she didn't seem to have that kind of personality.
There's some who considered her a poor soul, mentally disturbed. What's your feeling on that characterization?
I think she had mentally sort of problems, but the kind of mentally disturbed problems she had were mainly caused from the society that expected certain things from her as a 19-year-old woman.
Can you help her get over the cord? Go ahead. I'm sorry, go ahead. The other lady. Let me ask you another question, Linda. Let's skip to another subject. Right? We're of course going to talk to you more about Rosebud, perhaps, but Bag Ladies Revolt. Now, there's a group that hasn't been heard from much in the Santa Cruz scene. What was Bag Ladies Revolt?
It was nothing, really. It was just Jane Emler's, one of her little antics she popped up with, just to kind of throw a little wrench in the Christmas parade that year, 1988. Was it?
It was. It was Thanksgiving. It was held around Thanksgiving, shortly after Thanksgiving.
And so one night Jane just concocted this idea of us, as many women as we could get, come out dressed like bag ladies with bags all over us, and what do you call those things you push?
Shopping carts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I said, I'm willing to go on me. I love being spontaneous. Mm-hmm. So anyway, we got dressed that night.
What was the purpose of this? Why would you want to even dress up as bag ladies? And what was she trying to show?
Just sort of letting them know that we're
out
there.
Them being the mayor and the city officials of Santa Cruz?
Yeah, they were in front of us. We were behind them yelling, bag ladies, we won't really shut up.
So, this happened, as I remember, in the fall of 1988. In fact, we have another one of the Bag Ladies Revolt people here, Linda LeMaster. Weren't you a member of Bag Ladies Revolt, Linda?
Yeah. Jane and Linda and I are Bag Ladies Revolt.
And I remember I was one of the Baggy Boys Auxiliary at a later date, possibly.
I had some t-shirts.
Yeah. So now, what was the purpose of running around in the mayor's parade.
Wake people up. And people ask, we pass out flyers.
What kind of flyer? What were you saying to the people in that? In those
you know
flyers?
What? I don't remember.
Linda, do you remember? Linda
Lemaster? I don't remember the details on the flyer. I remember Rocky was always like half a black.
Rocky Stone, the other homeless activist.
He was handing our flyers out into the actual crowd at the parade. And we were following the Santa Claus float, which was basically the end of the parade.
Now,
we upset the mayor. She says we upset
Mayor Marty Wormhout.
I would think that the broken down antique car would have upset me if I were the mayor, but it was us three ladies following the parade that upset
Well,
her.
As I understand it, wasn't Jane Emler concerned about issues of violence against the homeless and inadequate shelter?
Well, we all were, and it was a year that you weren't allowed to pack. To camp in the mud hole that they now call the Back 40.
Okay,
it was a like every winter people tried to wake up a comfortable class, you know. And we thought this would be a way to add some, you know, people were coming out. It was a downtown celebration. We want people to think about the contradictions and what they say they're about and what they're doing.
The progressive city council, which had a 5-2 majority progressives over the conservatives, and yet, if I remember that season correctly, there were massive protests against the city council's failure to respond to homeless concerns around police abuse and the Santa Cruz City sleeping ban.
Yeah,
and also,
very much so.
There had been women that fall who had been raped along the San Lorenzo River and in some of the camping places. And I think we were trying to help make that point that homeless people aren't just men and ex-veterans. There's all kinds of people out there.
Linda, does that cover, what do you think, is that accurate? Or?
Yeah. Yeah.
Now, you weren't arrested by police for this demonstration. Is that right?
No. We didn't get in any trouble till afterwards.
And what trouble did you get into afterwards?
Conspiracy. Charge. That we had been conspiring to do this for months on end with some behind-the-scenes group.
And were you actually accused of conspiracy in a court?
Yeah, there was something. They put a paper out or something.
Yeah, they dropped it. It didn't get to be answered in court.
You were actually cited for something?
We didn't get anything. We just got a thing in the mail saying that this could be considered. And if we go to court or do a hearing or whatever, it could be brought down to some disturbing the peace or something.
Yeah.
So, anyway.
This was around the time of your first trial, too, of you were being tried for sleeping outside, some such thing, or a demonstration at City Hall.
Sleeping outside. The town clock.
Mm-hmm. And you were defended by the attorney, Grinning Ray Grunick.
Yeah,
that was
1988.
Back in 88. Mm-hmm. Back as I remember, the city council was so concerned about the court's decision, either by Commissioner Watts, I think it was, that they changed the sleeping ban. They had an emergency session in December to change the sleeping ban. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
Was that when the Russians were visiting at Harvey West?
No, that was four or five months before. That was the occasion when police for the first time made arrests for serving free food in Santa Cruz. You may remember because I believe you were one of the people arrested in the
several times.
In Blackball. In one of the most McCarthyist actions in recent Santa Cruz history.
This happened at City Council, where I believe you and the homeless, what was it called, the Coalition Against the Camping Ban or something, had been holding Tuesday afternoon meals right before City Council.
Oh, yeah.
And I believe...
I spoke out there and got arrested. Actually being told it's okay to have meals in front of city council. Because we've been doing that and we didn't do it that often. We got arrested anyway.
That's when I first met Keith McHenry.
Yeah.
Keith McHenry, the San Francisco Food Not Bombs activist who had come down for the day to support you folks.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, I was there too. I was sadly crying
about the fact that the city kept taking our pots and our food. And he says, well, don't let it wear you. Get a coffee pot. Get something else. It's like he just had this total spirit that you really can't stop people from making food for each other, no matter what curdles are thrown up.
They knew we weren't doing anything illegal. It's just that they did not want us in control of anything where it had to do with the poor and homeless. What they had in mind, which I knew back then, was to eventually set up some type of ghetto homeless service, or whatever you want to call it, to control and put people back there and have control over them and treat them like little kids or whatever they want to do with them. As of today, I was watching, and they were showing the homeless garden project.
This was today when you when you watched on television.
Yeah, just because the 71 channel is, 72 channel is Santa Cruz. So you know, you got TV and you got radio, and that came along the day center, and all the happy homeless faces eating away some good food. Eating better than most people for that day, of course. We all know.
This might bring us, if we skip ahead in time to 1991, 92, you were concerned about food at the Free Meal, the program set up by the city and county and first run by Jane Immler and then by Karen Gillette, to provide food every day at 4 o'clock for homeless people. The meal, which was in large part, as I understand, a function of the kinds of protests that you and Linda LeMaster and I and others, Sandy Loringer, Jane Immler, Brian D. Kepke, Brian Staley, participated in. But anyway, later on, you were at the Free Meal concerned about the food quality there, were you not?
Yeah, and only because the homeless were complaining. I would have never said anything if they hadn't bought it. I didn't go look at the food and nitpick it to death. And I didn't go there specifically to sabotage what they were doing.
What you did do, as I understand, was circulate a petition, right?
Yeah, circulate a petition of names of 50, 60 homeless people who were interested.
No.
Tell him, Linda, about how that idea unfolded.
Oh, it all started because the guy from, what was that place, health services? Or
I think it's city planning.
Yeah, and they were, Karen Gillette was trying to get a grant. So I went over and talked to him about it and about the food, showed him the petitions, and a lot of other stuff. And he says, well, it's really out of my hands now, but why don't you start a petition, he says.
You were opposing Karen Gillette's grant?
Mm-hmm. Because I thought until she is willing to admit the food was horrible and she would like to get it a better standard of food every day. But see, they got it around that I once taken potatoes and gourmet dining, you know. Oh, I was still thinking in terms of beans and rice, but to do something, and not to use spoiled meat, and not to use food that's been sitting around too long.
Turning down donated vegetables because it requires prep time, because they wanted to keep their kitchen closed. Things like mm-hmm. that were going on. The people that were complaining about the quality of the food were afraid to do it publicly. That's why they would come to someone like Linda. And it was the person who was in charge of getting the CDBG funds that Karen was using
Community
that
Development
suggested
Block
Linda go there with a petition idea that led to her being assaulted, including by women who were homeless. A woman, I should say.
You were assaulted while circulating this petition?
Yeah, because these people have been, homeless people have been getting wrong information.
And who gave them that wrong information?
Well, we don't know, but I think it was Karen Gillette, because she always wants people, she scares people out of coming back.
You
so,
hire bouncers and call them cooks? What's going to happen
yeah.
when that's what happens?
Yeah, they were more like bouncers in the place than they were cooked. So I knew something more was going on.
So you eventually, you were assaulted by one of her
one of the, her staff or the staff of the ISSP, the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program, which also...
Apparently she got the homeless people believing that all I wanted to do was get the place closed down, which I didn't. I just wanted better quality food. Not even as good as what Jane made, and hers was delicious. It didn't have to be that good.
See, what Jane did that Karen wasn't doing was she let the community at large know that food was appreciated. So they got pizzas and restaurant dinners from a lot more places than just India Joe's. I mean, that was leading. You know, they got people bringing good food there when Jane was in charge of it, you know. And when it became under Karen's helm, it was just more and more our little buddy system controlling the food and the quality of the food. And everyone on the street in this town at that time that ate there seemed to be agreeing that it wasn't nutritious and it was often not palatable.
Has that changed?
Well, I haven't been back there to eat since my son got sick off their food.
And when was that?
Oh, it was about the same time she was taking the petition. No, it was a few months after that.
So you circulated this petition. Did you? Didn't someone grab this petition from you and attempt to rip it up? Or?
They did. I pieced it back together, recoughed it with a gigantic shoe print on the back. That was just funny. Somebody said, "What's this?" I said, "The guy that ripped up my petition." They said, "You can sue for that. That's free speech. You have the right to say that."
Now, didn't you attempt to complain about this afterward to the group that controlled the free meal, the oversight group, the William James Association?
Mm-hmm.
And what happened when you tried to do that?
They didn't want to talk to me. They said everything's okay. They talked to all the health groups and they said the food was acceptable. They said, "No, it's not steak and potatoes." I said, "I'm not talking about steak and potatoes. I'm talking about edible food, that's it. Everyone deserves a good meal. And I know it's here to be had. And if it wasn't, I could understand. But it is. Tons of it." And, you know, first they're showing the day center and how successful it is. They're showing the garden project and how all that food's there. But they never talk about how the homeless were barely mentioned in this article. And it really made me mad because me and Pete and a few other people that were in J. Green that time, we had been going out there to work, and I thought, well, this is another thing we can do. So we'd take 2 hours in the mornings and go over and start, and there was nothing there. We started doing it.
Doing what?
The Homeless Garden Project, but it wouldn't call that then. Called the Homeless Garden.
And where was this?
Up off of...
Over by Lighthouse Field.
Yeah, off of Lighthouse Field. Okay, get in a little position.
Okay.
And just like the free meal, it was started by homeless people. But pretty soon these nonprofit guys come along to...
Paul Lee and Paige Smith, are we speaking of? Or?
That went quick.
Yeah, I don't know who was in charge of it. By the way, I have a lot of respect for the two women that are in charge of the Homeless Garden Project right now, but
and what women
they're
are
still under the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they can only get so far. Dairy and yeah, they would take you home with them if they thought you didn't have a place. Yeah. But they still have to run their program under the direction of the Citizens
Committee. And what impact has that direction had, Linda LeMaster, also known as Lighthouse Linda?
There goes my secret identity.
Who is this?
The Citizens Committee?
Mm. Yes.
Well, you know my opinion of them.
I know. What effect the Citizens Committee policies had on the homeless garden?
Well, it just keeps it contained. You know?
Mm.
If those women who run the Homeless Garden Project were given free rein, and they were an independent business, there'd probably be 4 or 5 homeless gardens by now. And who knows, maybe the homeless clients, their requests to have a little more hours and a little more autonomy would have been answered. Who knows? But there's that potential. potential.
They have what's known as student interns from UCSC right now. And they get most of all of what they're doing, and they turn around and sell it for profit. And it's kind of sickening. I think I only saw 5 people out of 20 or so who say they're homeless. And,
wow.
And they're in there because they are homeless. And they're getting sick. They also live at the day center and work there. See, because they're talking about putting this in, they want it in one big place. But I think it'll turn into a really horrible ghetto. That's what'll happen.
Well, what, you know, if you run a program like that with a certain number of people who have been down and out so long that they're willing to become subhuman in terms of ordinary employee rights, what happens to the rest of the homeless people? What happens to people with greater needs that can't work part-time and put up with that kind of a top-heavy infrastructure? What happens to people who aren't that dependent, you know, who would like the opportunity to take care of themselves? In program terms, in our county, there's no answer to those questions. If you're on your own, you're still excluded from society. If you play these little games and fit in this program and that program, maybe you can get help for a while until you start acting like you're going to make it. Then you get pushed right back out, you know. Nobody's getting housing that they get to keep. And now with the federal government canceling itself out of existence, it's going to be even harder. There's going to be